Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Non-XML Data Processing in WebSphere Data Power SLA Appliances Style Sheets Part 2 of 2 Advanced. Today's presenter is Herman Stamp-Wilbrand. Herman joined the IBM WebSphere Data Power team in April 2007. Since September 2010, he is a permanent Level 3 support specialist for the XML compiler team and team lead for the FixPack team responsible for the worldwide Data Power FixPack process. He started blogging on Data Power XSLT in January 2011. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Herman.
Thank you. Yeah, today, may you please change to slide number 2, please? Today's presentation has big agenda because I had so much stuff I wanted to put into this advanced webcast. The last week webcast on basics and encodings is already available on the web. The audio was added there today. First, I wanted to talk about the Coproc 2 tool. I would not have talked about it, but the Coproc tool available on the box is not able to deal with non-XML binary transform style sheets. Coproc 2 tool is, and it will be used heavily during this webcast in the samples. All the samples, all the style sheets, all the data is available as archive on the site where you also find the presentation and the audio. At the end of the presentation, these links are in the new information for Data Power slide, and so you can always go back and get the archives and just do what I did in the examples we will see in the following hour. The first real section on non-XML processing will be on encoding responsibilities. There will be a comparison between XML and non-XML processing and the responsibilities of dealing correctly with the encodings. Next section will deal with an interesting conversion from ISO 88591 to UCS2 character set, the normal way with input-output mappings and the interesting way with DPUR open, where you have to face some problems and to solve. Then there will be discussion on the conversion from ISO 88591 page to UTF-8 inside the style sheet. Func code point is a function I wanted to provide to enable you to get the Unicode code point for a given UTF-8 character in the style sheet. We talked last webcast that the internal encoding of Data Power is UTF-8. Next, we will talk about EBCDIC encoded XML and processing of that. While Data Power is able to generate EBCDIC encoded XML, EBCDIC is the standard used by IBM mainframes. We are not able to parse or process the EBCDIC encoded XML, and the non-XML processing doing the conversion of the EBCDIC encoding to UTF-8 enables the XML processing by XSLT style sheets. Next, we will have some advanced techniques on enhancing Data Power capabilities. First is on XS40. It's a security appliance. We don't have really non-XML data processing. We are not able to do PKCS7 signing or data glue licenses missing for WTX or Contigo FFDs. But we can do convert HTTP action to process HTTP form data. And we can use this feature in an interesting way to at least allow processing of non-XML Base64 data without tags around the data. Next thing is that we will talk about that non-XML raw TCP data processing is possible on Data Power, although it's not supported officially. In writing this up for this presentation, the solution I posted some months ago became nearly trivial, and so easy, it's unbelievable. Then we will see some applications. The first is a very simple one. It just retrieves a GIF image from the web. I just pointed the UI to a GIF image with a chess animation on my own private website. And if you run that style sheet in your Data Power environment, you will see the same picture or animation in your browser if you install it on the box. Very important application is the Makesma application. Makesma, you get in arbitrary binary data, and this application generates a dummy SOAP context, attaches the binary data as a SOAP attachment to that SOAP context, and then even is able to process on that. Next, I want to talk about a real binary application. Some weeks ago on the external Data Power forum, somebody wanted to send data to an AS400 service, and although it was XML data, it needed a binary prefix of 12 bytes, and on the return side, this prefix needs to be stripped and verified and validated, and the solution I want to talk about here today. Then, interesting thing, we get a DES key in compressed format, 56 bits, without parity, and the task is to move the bits so that we get a 64-bit DES key, which can be used for real crypto operations. It can be done in XSLT. Then I wanted to talk about processing multipart signed emails, how you can process them, and finally, this Snowman application, which converts Snowman as a bitmap, takes it as input and converts it to a text using Braille characters, and the Braille characters normally used by blind people will be the same picture, and the complete application will be done by Data Power. So slide number 3, please. Yeah, Coprot tool for non-XML off-box development. There is a Coprot service on the firmware. It was deprecated with 3.8.0 firmware. It never worked on XB, XM, and XE appliances, and it was not able to process binary style sheets. The Coprot 2 service started with the cited Data Power forum thread, in March this year. It is implemented as a multi-protocol gateway, so it runs on all platforms. The first client was a one-line shell script, bash script, for Linux or Cygwin environment under Microsoft Windows. Providing access from any operating system was done later by providing a Coprot 2 Java client, which is also able to be integrated into Eclipse for development. Some weeks ago, I posted Coprot 2 SWAR for enabling dealing with MIME-encoded messages, with multipart messages, and the normal endpoint for Coprot service was 2.2.2.3 for XML processing. Some weeks ago, I provided another endpoint, 2.2.2.4. By default, you can change that for the Coprot 2 non-XML service, which is able to deal with non-XML data, and that's what we are talking today about. So if you look on the top right, you see a simple style sheet. I think it's one of the style sheets we already talked about last week in the webcast. It just has an input mapping with the shipped FFD on the box, store PKCS7 convert input FFD, which takes a binary input and creates a binary node from that. If we look in the copy offline in the style sheet, we see that /opsec/message/notes selects the binary node, calls dpbinary encode on that to get a base64 string, and just outputs that. And at the bottom, you can see the two clients, how you use them. You just, on the left, you just use the shell script client, Coprot 2. As a first argument, you pass in the name of the style sheet to base64b.xsl. Then you pass in the name of the input file, in this case a non-XML input file, TE3T, we know from last webcast, which is essentially the test word where the S is replaced by the 03 non-XML escape character. And then we point to the Data Power endpoint. It's a non-XML service, so we point to the 2.2.2.4 point port service on one of my Data Power boxes here in Böbling Lab. And you see, as a result of the execution of this Coprot call, we just get the result of the binary base64 encoding from the style sheet and can enter the next command. On the right side, you see the same style sheet and the same input executed by the Java client. you have to compile the coproc to Java first by Java C execution, but if you have the coproc to class, you can execute the same as shown on the right side, and you get the same output. So you can use this client on all platforms. Slide number 4, please. Yeah, now we want to talk about encoding responsibilities. We have always an input encoding, at least if you have XML character data. And we have an internal encoding. We talked about that last time. That's UTF-8 encoding. And we have an output encoding of what the data power processing outputs to the backend. And we have two conversions to be done. In the beginning, we have to convert the input encoding to the internal UTF-8 encoding, and when generating output, we have to convert the internal UTF-8 encoding to the intended output encoding. And we, for XML, it's very easy. Who is responsible for the input conversion? It's the XML document's XML declaration encoding. And the default of that encoding is UTF-8, so if you don't have an XML declaration in the input document, then the encoding is assumed to be UTF-8, and otherwise it will be the encoding mentioned in that XML declaration. On the output side, the encoding for the output is determined by the XSL output statements encoding. And if you don't specify an encoding there, the default encoding for the output generation is also UTF-8. For non-XML, it's different. If you have a DP input mapping then of type string, then that string FFD encoding has an encoding you have to specify. We talked about that last webcast. On the output side, again, encoding only is interesting if we have a type equals string FFD, and in that case, the encoding from that FFD is taken. The difference here is, for XML processing, the style sheet does not need to know about the input conversion, because the input document specifies its own encoding, and DataPower knows how to deal with it. For non-XML processing, for example, zipped binary data or JPEG image or whatever, it can be a text, but there is no location where the encoding is stored. And so the knowledge of the input encoding conversion to UTF-8 has to be placed into the style sheet itself by providing the correct input mapping. Slide number 5, please. We talked about last week on safety, and safety requires that the representation of non-UTF-8 text is either done as binary node, BASIC64, or otherwise encoded, because the textual representation of non-UTF-8 text will run into problems and instabilities. We talked about this a little bit last week. We will talk about here in more detail. For example, if you have a real 0-byte in the text, then DataPower will terminate the string at that point. But that is not the worst that can happen. We will see a little bit in a minute. How to avoid non-UTF-8 is simply by using the validation approach from last webcast. The problem is that the DPUL open function does not provide any encoding conversion. And so you are a little bit left alone if you just do a DPUL open get from an external website and get an ISO 88591 encoded document, you get it as it is. You can only get it as a binary, as a response binary node, but what do you do with it? It's a wrong encoding, and you have to convert it to UTF-8, and on the next slides we will talk how you can deal on the input and on the output side for DPUL open with a different encoding. But now let's talk on the problems with the encodings and why it's so dangerous to use non-UTF-8 text in a non-encoded way. So the style sheet on the left bottom is just using the string UTF-8 FFD. It just takes the input as is and copies it to the output. And so we have five test files, tests TE3T, TE0T. These are the test files we already knew from last week. We have two new ones, C3A4T and C3ST. These are files where two characters of the test message are replaced by interesting codes, which lead to interesting behavior. So you see the test sent to the data power endpoint just returns the object message test as we like to see here. The second is the same sample we used last week to talk about the safety. The zero three character at the third position, you see this rectangle, it's dangerous. You get non-UTF-8 text here. If you have a zero byte at the third character, you don't even get the full string. The output is terminated after the E, so you only get TE. But it even gets worse. So if you have characters in the range above 127, then these are interpreted as UTF-8 encodings of Unicode characters above the ASCII range. So if you have a C3A4 sequence in the text, then you see the C3A4 is just the encoding of the 228 Unicode point, which is the German Ä umlaut. So you don't get four characters here, but three. T, Ä, T. And the last case is a really best example why you should care about safety representation. If you have a C3, which is the begin of a two-byte UTF-8 encoding, then the requirement always is in UTF-8 encoding that following bytes start with a high bit set in the seventh position, which means they are, from a character code perspective, greater than 127. And if you just put in the S, which is below, you see that you don't get any output at all. So the complete input is not available in such a case. And you see that it's no good idea to rely on this processing. Slide number 6, please. So the conversion from ISO 88591 to UCS2 is very simple if we are dealing with input and output of the style sheet. We just use an input mapping. We use the input mapping we learned about last week, string ISO 88591. Input FFD, we have the UTF-8 encoding. We can do validation, we should do validation, but it's not necessary, and we can use the output mapping and use the string UCS2 output FFD, and then we are done. UCS2, by the way, is the encoding. If you just have all Unicode characters, I think it's more than 100,000, and you just take the first 65,000 out of them, then each code point in that BMP, basic multilingual plane, needs 16-bit to address any such code point, and if you take this 16-bit number as the encoding, that's exactly the UCS2 encoding, which is also supported by data power. So now what do we do if the input and output is done by DPUL open? The safety requires to read the input as a binary node, but how do we deal with the encodings? Because the only way in data power to deal with input encoding conversion or output encoding conversion is by the DP input mapping and output mapping statement, which is not available inside a style sheet. It's just at the beginning and the end of a style sheet. So there's a workaround you can use. You can just call another service as a chain service doing what you want, and that's what I wanted to propose on slide number 7. Slide number 7, please. Yeah, here is a workaround. You have first an auxiliary non-XML loopback XML firewall named input mapping. It's listening import, in this example, 2221. And you have several matches for all the conversions you want to be able to be done. For example, you have a match for slash ISO 88591. And then you have only one transform binary action, and the action references the string ISO 88591 input XSL. And then you have another for ISO 88592 and all the others. And you have a match for UCS2. And for every encoding, you want to be able to process in your non-XML processing. In addition, for the output side, you have an auxiliary LUPEC XML firewall output mapping. It's listening in port 2222, and you have also the different matches, and you just use the equivalent style sheet, in this case the string ISO 88591 output XSL for the / ISO 88591 match. Slide number 8, please. On slide number 8, we see this method in action. On the left and on top right, there is a style sheet. On the bottom right, you see the execution. So we see on the output side, bottom right, the top line is COPROC2. We call the COPROC2 service. We call the ISO to UCS XSL style sheet, and we put in artificial input because it's not used. The style sheet takes its input from a DPUL open, and it puts its output to DPUL open. And so the input is not relevant, so sum.xml is just some input, and we send it to the XML endpoint of the COPROC2 service because it's not relevant here. And then we see the output. The received will be a binary from the DPUL open, and then it's converted to UTF-8. It's converted again to UCS-2 and then sent to the back end, and we will, with the UPL open, and we will see response. Let's start on the top left. The first thing is we get the 88591 encoded data by DPUL open call against data power box providing a simple service, which just gives us an 88591 encoded document. And we store it in the variable received. It's a binary node. In the next step, we convert that binary node to the textual UTF-8 representation stored in a variable UTF-8, and we do so by doing a DPUL open with response type XML. It's secure here because now we will have UTF-8 encoded data, and we pass in the binary node by the data type base64 trick we talked about last time, and the target is the internal service we talked about on port 2221 doing the input conversion for ISO 88591, and we pass just the base64 encoded binary node from the received document. We can get that value from $received $result/binary/node selector. So now we have in variable UTF-8 an XML response consisting of object message and then some UTF-8 encoded text. We now want to send that text to another service needing UCS2 encoded text. So we have to convert it first before sending it there. The conversion is done in the variable UCS2 by a DPUL open call. Response type, this type again, is binary node because it's non-UTF-8 encoding. The target is the second auxiliary service on 2222 port with the match UCS2 to get the right encoding, and we just pass the UTF-8 we have determined before. Now we have the binary node in UCS2 and can use that to send to a service expecting UCS2 encoding. And just for demonstration purposes, I just use the service, the auxiliary service again to demonstrate that this really works. We use the endpoint 2221 UCS2 only because that is an endpoint which is able to deal with UCS2 characters, and we send just what we have, the UCS2 result binary node, binary encoded is base64, and pass it, and get the response value. And then you see we just output the received variable, the UTF-8 variable, the UCS2 variable, and the response variable. And on the bottom right, you see the received is a binary node. You see all the header stuff from the HTTP protocol, and under real result binary, the binary node. Then you see the UTF-8 converted node, and you see all the German Umlaute. with a different encoded representation, and then you see UCS2 is again a binary node, and finally if you send this to the test service, we get back the converted from UCS2 just for demonstration purposes. So this method of having these two auxiliary services will allow you to deal with any input or output conversion you may need to deal within data power. What you should do, we talked about that before, is after you get UTF-8, you should verify that you really have UTF-8 by doing the binary encode and DPD code trick to validate the UTF-8 encoding. Slide number 9, please. So now we want to talk about if you are in a style sheet and you want to don't want to call out to another service and you have a code point number and want to determine the corresponding character in a non-UTF-8 encoding, for example, ISO 8859X, where X may be any number between 1 and 15, you can do so by the following trick. The first is you define the ASCII mapping, and you define a string of 32 characters. You see in the first line, these are the control characters. As you know, only the 9, 10, and 13 characters for tab, line feed, and new carriage return are allowed XML characters. All other characters have to be replaced by any character you like. I took the minus sign for that. Then you put in all the printable characters from ASCII. In fact, the character 127 is not considered a printable character. It's the backspace character, I think. But you see what I mean. It's just the other 96 encodings from beginning with a space and then the exclamation mark and all the other characters. Both strings together give 128 characters. And then you have to determine which of the ISO encodings you want to go. And you can go to ISO 88591, which is just the identity. So 128 is 128, and 255 is 255, and the same is true for all characters in between. That's the only ISO encoding with an identity. You see, the ISO 88592 encoding has some interesting Unicode code points at the end. The 15 encoding has some interesting Unicode code points in the middle. So the code point for 166 is the Unicode code point 352. And what you do with this is you just generate a variable name map2, for example, for the 2 encoding, and just concatenate the 3 strings, the control string, the printable string, and the string from the 88592 encoding. And then you can easily determine the character, the past character for that for an index I by just using the substring function for that string of 256 entries and just using 1 plus the index as an offset, and the length of the substring you are interested in is 1. You just want to take one character. That's the way you can access the character you want in the style sheet. Slide number 10, please. Now, how do you end up with the strings for the different encodings? You don't have to type them in yourself. You can just use data power for that. And you just use the identity transform for that. So on the left top, you see an ISO 88591 XML file. It's just XML version, encoding ISO 88591, and then in the T tag, you just see all the characters starting with 128 and ending with 255, and then the closing tag slash T. You have these input files also for the other encodings, for 2, for 15, and as I showed in the bottom left below, the diff between the different files is just the encoding. The rest of the file is the same. And then on the top right, you see you just pass the input file you are interested in this case, we have the one encoding at the top. In the middle, we have the two encoding and the 15 encoding at the bottom. We just pass this as argument to the with the identity style sheet and send it to the XML endpoint. And we do this without minimal output escaping, so we get the entity representations and we get exactly the strings we are interested in. You can just copy and paste these strings out into your style sheet. And in the middle you see that the 729 character as last character of the output matches what I showed on the other display. So again, you don't have to type it, you can just generate it. Slide number 11, please. Some code point, yeah, on the top right you see a little diagram from Wikipedia on UTF-8 encoding. You have 128 one-byte encoded characters, the ASCII characters. Then you have a lot more two-byte encoded characters, and you have some three-byte encoded characters and even four-byte encoded characters. I have provided some samples, the $XML, £XML, and EUROXML files, which just contain a single character, dollar, pound, or euro. And as you see, the style sheet on the left is left and right. It's split because it's a little bit longer. Just outputs the different encodings. On the top left, you see the template matching the root element, and it just outputs the identity with a new line, the code point determined by the function provided here with a new line, and then the radix convert to 16, so the hexadecimal output. And you can see on the middle in top output, the code point XSL for $XML, you get the dollar sign as output, the 36 is the code point, and the hexadecimal representation is 24. If you output the pound, you get the 163 as entity representation of the dollar sign. The code point function outputs the 163, and the hexadecimal encoding is C2A3. And the same is true for the euro encoding. You get the code point value, and you see easily it matches the entity representation, so the implementation is at least correct for these test cases. And I checked far more, so it should be good for you to use. Slide number 12, please. Now we are talking about EBCDIC encoding, the mainly used on IBM mainframe systems. But because data power is often used as a front side to mainframes, for example, to provide web services to mainframes without change on the mainframe, it's very interesting to know how to interact with the mainframe. So from the specification we see in the second item, it is required to read only entities in UTF-8 and UTF-16 encodings. So a processor only being able to read UTF-8 and UTF-16 is a compliant processor, although it is assumed that many encodings can be processed at least by the users of the processor. And the specification says that it's assumed that every processor only supports a finite amount of character encodings. So data power processor is able to deal with to read many encodings, UTF-8, UTF-16, ISO 8859X, UCS2, UCS4, and many, many, many others. And we are able to output the EBCDIC encoding, but we cannot read it. So it will complain about the L, and we will see on the next slide, slide number 13, please. Yep. So how do we get EBCDIC encoded data? Very simple. We just generate it using data power. And we do so by the style sheet on the top left. It's just an identity transform style sheet, and the encoding of the XSL output output element is the EBCDIC DE for Germany encoding. You can take any code page in the EBCDIC space you want. So below the style sheet, you see the output of the input file euro.xml, which contains special characters for several European languages. It's some Danish characters, some French characters, some German and some Spanish characters. If you just show the file, you see they are UTF-8 encoded, but you can see them. If you put out the hex dump on the file euro.xml, you see the UTF-8 encoding, the C3, A6, and all the different stuff. So it's UTF-8 encoded. Now we call COPROC2 service against the XML endpoint. This is 2appstick.de.xsl on the input file euro.xml, and put the output into the euro.xml.appstick.de file. And if we output the head and the tail of that file, the first 20 and the last 20 bytes of that file, you see it's funny characters. It starts with an L, and you have some non-printable characters in it, and you cannot really read what's in there. And if you try to process the original Euro file by the identity transform, you definitely get out the identity on the lower right output. But if you try to apply the identity transform on the appstick encoded same file, you get a parsing error. And the error you get, I copied out from the probe, and you see on the middle button illegal character L at offset 0, so data port doesn't know how to deal with this encoding. Slide number 14, please. And that's how we can deal with it. And on the top left, we see from appstick.de.xsl. We just execute it and send it to the non-XML endpoint. And you see the output. You get the Danish, French, German, and Spanish characters. And you get the output not in a visible form, but in the encoded entities. The style sheet doing so is just using the string appstick.de.ffd, which is stored on the box and in the local directory to be able to be accessed, because the COPROC2 service only sends a style sheet, and you have to place the FFDs in a retrievable manner. So I just stored it on the local directory. It's just an identity transform. And on the top right, you see the difference for the UTF-8 and the appstick.de FFD. It's just the encoding, so you can put in any encoding you like. And on the middle right, you see another execution of a style sheet. You see on the bottom right, it's the parse appstick.de. If you really want to process the appstick encoded XML data, you can do so. And I send it against a service with minimal output escaping enabled. And here you see that the output is the visible characters again, not the entity encodings. So you see the German ä, ö, ü, and the SZ lick, I think it's the English name for it, and the Danish and French characters. And you see, again, the input mapping is the string appstick.de, and the interesting point is here you have to parse the input. And you can do so by the dpparse function. Very important point here. You know, after the input mapping has done its job, we have UTF-8 encoded input. But the input document states that it's appstick encoded, which is wrong at that point. The XML declaration is unchanged. And so we have to skip the XML declaration. And the trick you can use to do so is just getting the string after the XML declaration. And in the style sheet, in the copy of line, you see how we do that. We just do the substring after from the input after the question mark greater sign. So we just skip the XML declaration and start the parsing from data power side on the rest of the document. One last interesting point on the top left. If you look at the output, which just is an identity transform, while we have generated the file as appstick-de encoded, you see now here in the identity transform that the encoding is IBM 273, which is the code page number of that encoding. So you cannot assume that you get the identity, but at least it's the name of the encoding you have provided. Slide number 15, please. Oh, yeah. Non-XML data processing on NXS40, we only have a convert HTTP action to deal with non-XML HTTP form data. We have nothing more, and there's a very simple workaround. Tech sales person from IBM was at a customer and developed a style sheet solution to deal with some L assertions, and these some L assertions were just non-XML Base64 strings. And after everything worked, he should deploy that to the target system, but the target system was an XS40, which does not allow non-XML processing, and he was in big trouble. And the solution here is a very tricky one. We generate a multi-protocol gateway. We say it has a non-XML request type. We put in a fetch action with output type binary. You can access that in the advanced tab, and we fetch a file, and that file has just the content prepend equals, nothing more. And that's all you have to do. If you send non-XML data to this service, you will get prepend equals as output, and then data provider behavior, if non-XML input is not used, and we have don't have a binary transform action in that policy, it just gets copied to the output. So after the output you will get is prepend equals, and then what you have sent in as input. And this will be sent to another chain service on the box, on localhost, on port 2, and on that port, you have another service which is of non-XML request type and uses the convert HTTP action to process the HTTP form data. And you can see that this really works by the execution. We start by doing the echo command with the blah string. So we have the text blah and nothing more. The minus E eliminates the new line at the end of the string. So then we pipe this to the Base64 command, so we now have a Base64 encoded string blah, and send this as input to the service installed on 2229. And the standard input is the minus sign, so curl minus minus standard binary at minus says just take the input, which is the Base64 string, and send it to this non-XML service. And as you see, the output is just the output of the convert HTTP action. And here you can see arg name equals prepend, and then the Base64 encoding of the blah. So from that point on, it's XML, and you can process it as if XS40 would have been able to deal so to do so. You can also process other stuff. Most of the ASCII characters are no problem. Problem will be that you cannot use, for example, the ampersand character, because that will be interpreted as a separator for the next field. Slide number 16, please. Yeah, while writing this presentation, it turned out to be so easy to deal with non-XML raw TCP data on DataPower. We provide a raw XML protocol handler, which means we can accept without any protocol raw TCP, and if it's XML, we just get the data and data until the closing tag of the opening tag is seen, and then we know message is completed and we process it. We have no support for raw TCP non-XML front-side processing. On the back side, we have full support by the TCP or colon or TCP SSL colon protocols. And we can use these TCP protocols for the DPL open function to talk to backends in a raw TCP fashion. So TCP proxy allows to pass through non-XML raw TCP traffic, but you cannot do any processing on it. So the following workaround is interesting. You have a multi-protocol gateway, and now you only rely on supported features. It's really cool. You have just a pass-through request and a pass-through response type for this multi-protocol gateway. Because there is no processing at all, both directions pass-through, you can use the default policy, which has no rule at all. And with this service, the input just gets copied to the output. And the trick is here that the backend is HTTP localhost port 2, and this backend sending is doing the HTTP conversion for you. So you get in raw TCP data without any protocol, and the next service on port 2 will see HTTP encoded non-XML data, which can be processed. The second service is listening on port 2. It's of non-XML request type and has a transform binary action, and then you can do whatever you want. Slide number 17, please. This is just the whole thing in action. On the top left, you see how you can test the Netcat tool, NC, which is available under Linux or Cyqwin under Windows, to do a simulation of services, NC-L, or hot TCP service, or of a client by NC, IP number, port number. And on the left bottom, you see Wireshark follow TCP stream output after sending the a test request with a curl command to the endpoint 8124. You see it sent as a post request, and the test request is the little payload after the content type and the empty line. And then you see in blue shaded the HTTP 200 response, okay, and the response is just the base 64 encoding of it at the bottom. And it's exactly the same you see in the execution of the curl statement. And on the right, you see two follow TCP streams. I did a packet capture on the data power box, and you see the call was just take the test request and send it with the netcat command to the data power box on port 8121. And then just give out what comes back. And the packet capture, if you do a follow TCP stream for the front port, you see it comes in without any protocol, the test request, and it will send back the without any protocol response data. And if you do the follow TCP stream for the internal connection on port 8124, you see that this input data test request gets converted automatically by the MPGW service we provided to a post request, and the test request is sent to the second service. The second service sends back with an HTTP response the non-XML data. And the trick is that the first multi-protocol gateway strips again the HTTP response header and just sends back the real data. So this is non-XML raw TCP processing. Tonight, slide number 18, please. Yeah, that's a very simple application. We want to get a GIF file from the web and display it in the browser. If you install the style sheet on the right side on one of your boxes and have it the service process empty requests, you can just do a browser get to that service, and it will get you the picture and display it in the browser. It does so the following way. The first thing is the HTTP request header content type is set to image GIF to display correctly in the browser. The second thing in the middle, the variable GIF, is the binary data. So we do a DPUL open, we access my private website and take just one of the animated chess GIFs there, and the response type is binary node, and you will have get the picture, the animation, in the variable GIF. And the third thing is we have to send it as a response, as binary node. And as you know, we get it from $GIF result binary / node. We select the binary node and we just wrap it with the object and message tag. And because of the DP output mapping for StopPKCS7 convert input, this output will be just strip off the object message tag and send the picture, the animated GIF back. And you can see a sample execution by the Coproc 2 client. Input is not important, so we send in arbitrary input, the echo command. We pass it to the getGIF XSL, send it to the XML endpoint of the Coproc 2 service, minus V is the verbose output. We want to have much output. I will show you later. And we want to have a silent mode, the S, which says, no, don't show the processing transform progress of data. We redirect the output and the error output of that execution into files out and error. The out file is the GIF returned back from my website, and you can easily see this by the file command, which tells you the file type of an arbitrary file. And if we do file out, it says, yeah, it's a GIF image, version 89A, and also tells you about the dimension of that image. And then if we do look at the error output and all the lines which start with the less than character, we get the response from the service. And you see HTTP 200, okay, and the content type image GIF, because that's the content type we set with the dpset HTTP request header command. Slide number 19, please. That's a cool application. We talked about that before. We take binary non-XML input and just attach it as a SOAP with attachment. The input of that styled can be input and output as null, but it's not important because we generate a completely new context SWA for SOAP with attachment. And it will consist of the dollar dummy document and the binary attachment, and the content ID of that attachment will be non-XML. And we have two possibilities to generate hexadecimally encoded representation of non-XML input. The first one we talked about last webcast was use the hex binary FFD or DP Radix convert, DP binary encode, and convert Radix convert from 64 to 16. The other one is to use the SOAP with attachment and then access the attached attachment and provide the option encode equals hex bin, which gives you back the hexadecimal encoding of it. And they are these access to the attachment is only minimally more efficient than the Radix convert, so there is no need to use this as a technique to convert input data to hexadecimal. On the lower left, you see a sample application of the style sheet on the right side. On the file we know, TE0T with a zero character at third position against the non-XML endpoint, and tidy-q-xml is just doing a nice XML format output. And you see we get a base64 encoding of the input string, we get a hex bin encoding, hexadecimal encoding of the input string, and we get the input string as a binary node by the style sheet on the right. And let's start at the top, template match slash, so it's the entry point. We define a dummy variable just containing a SOAP document with a dummy SOAP node. You can put in anything you like, it's not important. Then we create the context SWA by the set variable. While the documentation on variable usage does not tell you anything about it states var context slash context name slash variable name. That's what documented. If you just use this two-step approach here, context var, you define the whole context. I made use of that in the Coproc 2 tool, where this is used to generate the context needed, which holds a style sheet for the execution itself. The next thing is we have to set the content type. In this case, it's application SOAP XML, SOAP plus XML. Then we do the attachment, and in the InfoCenter documentation, if you just search for attachment protocol, you find all the details. We do a DPUL open. We say the protocol is not something but attachment. We want to attach to this SWA context, and the content ID of the attachment will be non-XML. So CID for content ID colon non-XML. We pass the data base64 encoded, the normal method for providing binary data, and we say we are not interested in the response. We just ignore it. And we pass the binary node by the method we already know of. And then we generate the output we have seen on the left side just for demonstration purposes, because we are done at this point. The attachment is in the SOAP with attachment context. And you see the return is very simple. You do DPUL opens to access the attached attachment. And attachment colon context names var in this case slash CID and the name of the content ID gives you access to the attachment, and then you can state encode equals base64, you get it base64 encoded. If you use encode equals hexbin, you get it hexadecimally encoded. And if you don't provide any encode option and just say response is binary node, you can access the attachment as a binary node and process it further by the methods we have talked about. Very cool method of dealing with arbitrary stuff. Last week there was a posting on external data power forum. Somebody asked how to process the zip archive. I modified just this sample a little bit. You have to provide a data type, a content type of the attachment, and if you say application zip, then data power even knows that it's a zip attachment and is able to, for example, show you the list of contents of the zip file. It's out on, and I edited that to my blog. And at the end of the presentation, there's a link to my blog, so you can find it there. Slide number 20, please. Oh, yeah, that's an interesting application. The problem statement is we have an XML service on an AS400 system, and that needs binary prefixed XML data. And the format of the binary prefix in Java notation is we want to have write int 1, write int XML length, and write int null. Well, write-int generates a 32-bit number representation of these numbers. And the data power service needs to prefix the XML correctly for sending to the AS400, and on the response, it gets back a prefixed response. It has to strip the 12 bytes of prefix and has to validate that the prefix is in the correct format, the 1 and the 0 and the XML length, and that the response is really XML. And we will see how this can be done. Cool technique. So first the request side, slide 21, please. Yep. On the top right, you see I sent a sample document, tag D, 1023, and then closing tag D. It's a minimal input XML document, and this XML document is 10 bytes long. I send it to the AS400 XSL service for the request side, and the miner says take the standard input and send it to the endpoint. And at the end, the output of the execution on the XML endpoint is put in the octal dump tool, and we see output of character and hexadecimal data. And so you see, we have binary stuff and 12 bytes of binary stuff, and then you see on the first line at the end the D tag, then the 1023, and the closing D tag. If you look at the hexadecimal output, the rectangle, the blue rectangle, shows you the length. Oh, it's not 10, it's 11, because I missed the new line character after the XML document, which is put in by the echo command if you don't execute it with a minus E option. So you see 000B for 11 is the length, and the blue bar under the bytes shows you that exactly 11 bytes. I want to talk not that deeply. On the bottom left, lower left, you see the interesting function where you can convert a number to a 32-bit representation of that number. The trick here is a base64 encoding of that. We do add something which is definitely bigger than 32-bit, and we add this big number, 429, blah, blah, blah. That number is exactly 2 to the power of 32. This number will not fit into a 32-bit word and will lead to an overflow. So we just add that number to the argument $u. Then we do a radix convert function, this time from a number, radix 10, to base64. So we get a base64 string of this number. And because it's more than 32-bit, we get a 5-byte base64 encoding. So base64 encoding of 5 bytes. And we know that the first byte is not important because that's the 2 to the power of 33, and we just strip it off by the substring base64 command at the second position. So we get just the last 4 bytes of the base64 encoded string, and that's exactly the string we need. The command says the number 258, it's 1 times 256 and plus 2. So you see the output, it's AAABAG equal, and that's the equivalent of the hexadecimal representation 0012. Okay, the style sheet on the right, we serialize the XML input into the serialist variable. We don't want to have an XML declaration here, so we say omit XML declaration equals yes. Then we generate the binary stuff we want to send to the AS400 service. We do this by concatenation, but we concatenate base64 strings by the dp concat base64 function. This function is different to the concat function as it only allows for 2 arguments and not arbitrarily many, so we have to call it several times here. The first is we use the auxiliary function we talked about just a minute ago for the number 1, then for the number for the string length of the serialized string, and concatenate it with the base64 encoding of the number 0, and we have to add the serialized XML, but now we have to add it base64 encoded, because this is what has to be passed to the concat base64 function, so we just call the dp encode function on the serialized string. So all this will be concatenated together, and the B64 variable will hold the complete base64 encoded non-XML data. Then we send this out as binary by the method you already know, object message wrapper and dp binary encode of the dp binary decode of the base64 string gives you the binary node, and by the dp output mapping on the top left with the shipped style sheet, we get the binary data out. So this was the request side, and we have exactly the binary stuff sent to the AS400 we want. Now the response side on slide 22. Here again, you see we have several response files. The AS400, that is the normal response file where everything is fine, the encoding is fine, the length is fine, the response is XML. And then we have 5 test files you will find in the archive, which have wrong lengths, non-XML encodings, or any other thing which may fail. And let's start at the style sheet on the lower left. We get an input mapping, we get the binary node, then on the top right we get in the variable all just the base64 encoding of what we got, and in the first step we want to verify that the first 4 bytes are really the number encoding of the number 1. As we do so very easily, we start with the $all variable, we do a substring base64 and just extract from the first position length 4 the substring. We have exactly the representation of the first 4 bytes, and we now convert it from base64 to 10 to get the actual number value. And then we just compare whether it's 1 or not. If not, we terminate the execution with the XFM message terminate equals yes and give a reason that the first integer is not 1. Then we serialize the XML input and do UTF-8 validation for the input. This is done in the serialized variable. We take the substring starting at the 13th byte, because the first 12 bytes are the prefix we are not interested in, and then we just decode it as a base64 string and get back with validation the XML in the serialized variable. Then we check the length of the serialized, and again we take the second 4 bytes starting at position 5, convert it from 64 to 10, get the number value of that, and just compare it whether it's the same as the string length of the serialized string. If not, we abort. The fourth check is that the third number is a 0 number starting at position 9, length 4. And now we have to check whether that what we got back is really XML, and we do so by doing a DP parse on the serialized value and get the result in the XML variable, and you get back a node set. And if it's not XML, you get back the empty node set. So we have to check whether we get a non-empty node set, and this can be easily done by $XML/*, which matches any node in the node set. And if we don't have one, the not, then this is exactly the case of the empty node set returned. And in this case, we terminate with non-XML payload. And the last command, copy of select $XML, just returns the XML in case of the good response from the backend system. So this is a really cool full binary solution on the request side. We put in binary prefix as needed by the protocol on the AS400 service, and on the backside we are able to deal with the non-XML stuff and get out the information we are interested in and do the validation, and all is done safely. Slide number 23, please. That's an application. Don't want to go into detail right now because we are a little late in time right now. You see the examples. All the stuff is contained in the attachment. We have several input files, key 0, key 6, key A, key F, and you see the output generated from it. The first thing is the input, 14-digit number, and the second line always is the output, the 64-bit, meaning 8 bytes, so it is 16 digits, where each hex digit encodes 4 bits. And the comments at the different templates explain how this really works. Again, it's a recursive style sheet and nice style sheet. You can easily understand. In case any function questions arise, on the first slide of this presentation, my email address is stated. You can send me an email. The other option you have is you can just reply to the announcement thread of this webcast and with a question, and I will answer it there, or we can talk about it at the end of the presentation. So, slide number 24, please. Processing multi-part signed emails, it is talked about in the Data Power Forums thread, referenced below the style sheet. On the left side, you see the input Data Power receives from somewhere. If you Data Power gets it from the normal service, for example, on the B2B appliance, it's able to process these kind of messages. No problem, but if you retrieve the data, for example, from MQ or a system which is not, where Data Power does not know that it's quoted, printable, encoded, it does not know to deal how with it, to deal with it. So the QPMIME is a sample input, and you see in the preamble, that's everything before the first MIME terminator. MIME terminator is the boundary is defined in the file here itself. It's a minus, 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 part 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And everything before this separator is the preamble, and this contains the information about the MIME type and subject and email and all that. The first part is the XML content. You see sample, if you believe that truth, and then equals 3D beauty, then surely equals 20 equals. That's the so-called quoted printable encoding. The equal sign is the escape character for the encoding, like the percent sign for URL encoding. And then the next two bytes are the hexadecimal encoding of the character. So 3D is the equal sign itself. 20 is a space, and 0A is a new line. And as you see below, There is also another part, the S/MIME cryptographic signature. This is has been removed from the sample file because we are not interested in this signature. We are interested in processing just the first part, the XML part, and do the decoding. And the first solution to this is by the style sheet on the right side. We don't do much. We just extract what's needed. Again, we get it as non-XML. The first statement in variable input 64, we get the base 64 non-XML input, as always. The next thing is we base 64 decode the results and validate it for UTF-8, so we get the validated input in the input variable. The third step is we need to determine the boundary, but the boundary is not that difficult to find. It's in the preamble, so we just first search for the substring in the input after boundary equals quotation mark and before the next quotation mark. So in the boundary variable, we get the value of the boundary, and we can use this to extract what we are interested in. But in this solution, we don't do that. We just set the content type differently. And we set it to multipart related and say it's an text XML document, and the boundary, as boundary parameter, we pass the just determined dollar boundary variable within quotes, and that's it. And if this is sent to a next chain service, that service will just find a multipart related message, and by magic, that service on Data Power is able to deal with the quoted printable encoding and give you the XML document decoded, and you can see the normal output you want to have. You don't see the 3D and 20 and 0A. The second solution on slide 25 is if you are doing the decoding yourself, you see three outputs of the quoted printable XSL style sheet on the same QPMIME input against the non-XML endpoint of GoProc 2 service. The first is just a copy of the input, so you see the escape characters and the input. The second is the decoding, so the quoted printable characters like equals 3D has already been decoded. And the third is if that string will be parsed, then again you get the real XML data, and as you see, I took that sentence out of a Wikipedia example and added some German Umlaute, and you can see you really see the German Ä, Ö, Ü Umlaute in small and big capitals, and everything works fine. Style sheet itself on the right side and on the next slide is very detailed documented and left as a homework for you. Okay, slide number 26, please. Yeah, that's the second part of it. The only thing I wanted to talk about is, again, we have to convert the index positions to UTF-8 characters, and we do so by a method similar to the method we talked about in the beginning for determining the UTF-8 character. So the map variable on the bottom right is essentially containing 256 characters, which are used for the encoding. So you have to know the encoding. The quoted printable encoding is guaranteed to only contain ASCII characters, but the encoded parts can contain any encoding, and so your application has to know what encoding is to be expected and has to provide the correct map file here. Slide number 27, please. Yeah, now we are coming to the last slides. This will not last so long anymore. The bitmap presentation of the NetPBM format, on the left side you see the Snowman as a picture. Just one rectangle is a pixel normally. It's very large scaled here. And on the right side, you see the NetPBM format, the PB1 format. It's ASCII. And in the first line, you see the encoding P1, then the horizontal and vertical dimension, and then zeros and ones for dots or not dots. Slide number 28, please. Here you see the application itself. On the right, you see the Braille character table, the characters, Unicode characters from 10,240 to 10,495 are the Braille characters. The first one is the empty, and the on the bottom right in the table you see the last one, 10,495. It's the one where all the bits are set for the Braille characters. You can get the table from the Unicode org site, and just for display here I created a small HTML table to show you that every bit possibility is available here. So if you send the Snowman file to the endpoint with the solution installed, you see the output on the left. It's the Unicode output, and you see on your terminal the Snowman converted to UTF-8 characters. Slide number 29, please. The same output can be generated for the browser. In this case, it needs to be entity encoded. You see on the left, Opera and Firefox nearly display it the same way. On the right, you see how I did the picture. It's just a big table, and I just turned on border equals 1 to show the table I used to create the picture to give you an idea how this works. Slide number 30, please. The u.xsl on the left side is the style sheet doing the conversion for the Unicode output on the command line. The h.xsl is doing the same for the HTML output. If you see the very first template named char on the left side, for you it's just for a character, it's called a function we will see on the next slide, func braille for the character. On the right side you see a td tag start and td tag end is surrounded to that, because on the HTML output you need to generate the table data element for the HTML table. On the bottom, you see if you call the u.xsl with the coproc2 service, it depends what you see on the minimal output escaping of the endpoint. I have two data power boxes. On one, in the non-XML endpoint for coproc2 service, I have a minimal output escaping. In that case, it's a top execution. You see the output is the Braille character output with the visible picture. The second is against the service, which has a minimal output escaping set to no. And so the output is just the entity encodings of the 10,000-something characters. Slide number 31, please. That's the last slide, the actual implementation. So we have to step through the bitmaps in steps of four lines in the vertical and 2 pixels on the horizontal. The stylesheet itself doing so, the recursive is in the s.xsl file, and it makes use of the mapping to determine the actual Braille character to use on the map.xsl file on the stated on the right. The details you can look up in the archive, you can just download. Slide number 32, please. So now we are nearly done. We talked about the coproc2 non-XML endpoint and how it is useful for off-box non-XML processing on data power and doing development on it. We talked about many different aspects of encodings. We talked about non-XML processing on XS40 and for raw TCP non-XML data. We talked about normal binary GET application, about the possibilities of attachment protocol from data power and how to make use of that for non-XML data. We talked about reading and writing real binary data with the AS400 application, and we looked at several binary data processing applications. All files used are available by the links in the webcast. Files 2.zip is what you get from this webcast, and files.zip is what you get from the last webcast. Slide number 32, please. 33, please. Yeah, these are the important links you need to know. The first is the link to the current presentation with the audio recording available next week and the attachments. The second is the link to the previous webcast where everything is available right now. Link to the DataPower DeveloperWorks DataPower external DataPower forum. Link to my blog where you can find interesting XSSD stuff and link to the old webcast from last year where some of the non-XML features have already been used for other purposes. So with this, I'm good over time, but I wanted to give back to Joseph.
Thank you, Herman, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
We have no questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And I don't see any questions in the group chat either. So at this point, here we go. Just got one question here from Roy. And his question is, what about converting a binary data object into a proper XML document, splitting the binary data into elements?
Yeah, this is definitely possible, but you need to know where to split the binary data. So you need to have an idea on the format, and an example for this could be the response of the AS400 service. We saw how the prefix of the 12 bytes has been handled, and we could have also generated an XML document, a response document, containing the three numbers returned, the first 32-bit, the second 32-bit, and the third 32-bits, and the XML document at the end. In total as a response. So we could have generated a bigger XML response from that. It's always the same. You use the Redix convert and binary decode encode functions to deal with the binary data, and then you can just output it in a way you like to generate a real XML response if you like.
Okay, so it looks like we don't have any other questions at this point in time. So right now, we will conclude the presentation.